ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Text 45, Canto 4, Chapter 8. Prasadhabhimuktam, prasadhabhimukam shashvat, prasanna vadanekshanam, sunasam subhrubam charu. Kapalo surasundaram prasadhabhimukham shashvat prasanna vadanekshanam susanam subhrubam charu kapalam surasundaram Prasada abhimukham, always prepared to offer causeless mercy. Shashvat, always. Prasanna, pleasing. Vadana, mouth. Ikshanam, vision. Sunasam, very nicely constructed nose. Subhrubam, very nicely decorated eyebrows. Charu, beautiful. Kapalam, forehead. Sura, the demigod. Sundaram, good looking. Glamour magazine. Translation. The form of the Lord is described herein, that's in brackets. The Lord's face is perpetually very beautiful and pleasing in attitude. To the devotees who see him, he appears never displeased, and he is always prepared to award benedictions to them. His eyes, his nicely decorated eyebrows, his raised nose and his broad forehead are all very beautiful. He is more beautiful than all the demigods. Nari should know. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The purport doesn't sound anything like the verse. This verse clearly explains how one has to meditate on the form of the Lord. Impersonal meditation is a bogus invention of modern days. And the rest continues like that. In none of the Vedic literatures is impersonal meditation recommended. In Bhagavad Gita, can you get Bhagavad Gita? When meditation is recommended, matpara, which means pertaining to me, quote unquote, is used. And any Vishnu form pertains to Lord Krishna because Lord Krishna is the original Vishnu form. Sometimes someone tries to meditate upon the impersonal Brahman, which is described in Bhagavad Gita as avyakta, meaning unmanifested or impersonal. Both of those are in quotes. Unmanifested or impersonal. But it is remarked by the Lord Himself that those who are attached to this impersonal feature of the Lord suffer a very troublesome task, because no one can concentrate on the impersonal feature. One has to concentrate on the form of the Lord, which is described here in connection with Dhruva Maharaja's meditation, as will be apparent from later descriptions. Dhruva Maharaj perfected this kind of meditation, and his yoga was successful. We'll read the verse again. Prasada bhimukham shashvat prasana vadanekshanam sunasam subhravam charu kapalam sura sundaram. Sura sundaram, more beautiful than all the demigods. The Lord's face is perpetually very beautiful and pleasing in attitude. To the devotees who see Him, He appears never to be displeased, and He is always prepared to award benedictions to them. His eyes, His nicely decorated eyebrows, His raised nose and His broad forehead are all very beautiful. He is more beautiful than all the demigods. The message of the Bhagavatam is very clear, and in case the reader doesn't get it, Prabhupada gets his hammer out to make sure they get it. The Ashtanga Yoga process is being directly referred to. Pranayamena, the pranayama, sort of asana process, the whole procedure, like described in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Dhyan yoga is described, and there are impersonalists who, I mean, aside from, as the previous verse was Prabhupada dismissing the gymnastic system of yoga, I mean, thinking that that's all that there is, take it to another level, where there's some spiritual interest actually in all of this. And spiritual doesn't just mean like mode of goodness. Spiritual means fixing the mind on that which is beyond the material creation, our original position of the living entity, our actual spiritual identity, and fixing the mind upon that in that quieted state. So there are those that perform, there are lots of those who perform the Ashtanga yoga system practice of some form or another, and their interest is impersonal liberation. And so fixing their mind on something impersonal, well, Prabhupada says it's a bogus invention of modern days. Of course, there's the ancient days version and there's the modern days version. And the modern days version is philosophized. It's not really a formal meditation. Meaning, Shankaracharya, and his teaching is modern compared to the history of the Vedas themselves. Let's say when Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years ago, where reference is made to meditation upon the impersonal feature, chapter 12, specifically reference is made. So that's not exactly modern. Shankaracharya's the reference here, and other derivations, where it's, I mean, frankly, it's just word jugglery. There's no formal meditation, etc., and nor realization. It's just philosophized impersonalism. Or say the same thing in a different way. It's not a philosophy that people live by, and Prabhupada would challenge. Your philosophy is it's all one. Very well, give me all your money, because it's all one. Or, it's all one, therefore, why are you wearing a shirt instead of a cotton ball? Because it's all one. At least the way that that description was told to me, Prabhupada grabbed somebody's shirt and started like this. Why don't you wear a cotton ball? Why are you wearing shirt? It's all one. He didn't like that notion. I'll very quickly tell a story you've heard many times, because I heard it many times from Jayadwaita Swami, who, by the way, never finished high school, but became the editor of Prabhupada's books, because he saw high school was just a waste of time, and he saw what Prabhupada was giving was something of great value. So when he was like 17, coming to hear classes, there was an uptown girl from, you know, they would go to the uptown Swami's group, but also came downtown and heard Prabhupada speaking. And the way Jayadwaita Maharaj tells the story, she had one of these pasted on smiles. And at the end of one class, she raised her hand, she probably would never do that again, and said, "Yes, but Swamiji, you're speaking of the personality of Godhead, but Swamiji, isn't it, in the final analysis, everything is all one?" And Prabhupada, Jayadwaita Maharaj, his body began to tremble, shake. "All one? You say it is all one? Then why don't you put your food here instead of here? It's all one."
"Oh, Swamiji."
He was like, you know, of course, Jayadwaita Maharaj cracked up. And loves to tell that story. And then he repeated it. You know how we would do it. "Why don't you put your food here? It's all one." And other such things. It's not a philosophy that one lives by. It's all one. It's a philosophy that one doesn't live by. What's the use of a philosophy that one doesn't live by? I mean, the best you can say is it's hypocrisy. But, you know, it's useless. We don't live our lives that way. We make distinctions, even within the field of the material energy. What to speak of the spiritual realm. And this influence is a modern day influence. Where is our historian? Dittendri is not here. During our very recent St. Louis Rath Yatra, Rupa Sanatan somehow made some connection with some leader of a Hindu society or something like that. And fortunately, it was at the beginning and not at the end. So at the beginning, he gave him the microphone to make kind of like an inaugural address before the Rath Yatra, without any preview of the script. So immediately, the first thing the man began doing is glorifying Vivekananda. First thing, our great heritage was brought to America. You know, later was then Swamiji came and, you know, continued that heritage of our country, great country indeed. But the first was glorifying Vivekananda. He came and he spoke at the World Parliament of Religion and astounded all the religious people of the world of the great heritage. Here's our historian. So, when was that? The first World Parliament of Religion, 1896? By law? 1892. And what I was told was, when he was called upon to speak to the assembly, his first words were something like this: "You've all come searching for God, but I've come to bring the good news. You are all God." Yes? Ooh, and the audience was, "This is the religion of India? You are all God?" And then Prabhupada comments, "The conference was a week long, and unfortunately God got a toothache." So he had to leave the conference because God got a toothache. He had to go to God dentist to get take care of his God toothache. It's a philosophy that we don't live by. It's but very popular. And think I'll go there. Mahatma Gandhi, looking at bylaw, because he sent out a thing saying, you know, ISKCON has put Bhagavad Gitas in motels very extensively in the Bay Area and Southern California and in Boston. There are groups of devotees that have done this. There's some Guyanese fellow in Toronto that wants to put the Gandhi Gita in motels throughout the country. And they printed how many? A million? Well, guess whether it's impersonal or personal. Strictly impersonal. I sent a little file to Nityananda Pran to share with you. And you'll be shocked, perhaps. Maybe you already know, but it's shocking how impersonal. We don't normally go there because, you know, he's Gandhi. And people's sensibilities kind of... But Prabhupada didn't mess around with impersonalism. He was... Once I was visiting somebody's home somewhere, I can't even remember where it was, and there was a program and I spent the night at their home, and so I got up early and chanted japa, and by the time I finished japa the family was still so I went to their library and was looking in their library and saw Gandhi's Gita. So I took it off the shelf, random opened up the Gandhi Gita, and the first thing I read was, "There was no such thing as Krishna who induced Arjuna to fight in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. If there was such a person, then I renounce my Hinduism. It's mythology, and my Krishna is blah 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 blah." I closed the book, put it back on the shelf. Read the little directly taken from his, he wrote a Bhagavad Gita commentary and also made a preface to someone else's commentary, and it's explicitly hardcore impersonalism. We don't want that promoted. We don't want our members to contribute to that fund that's going to help see that those million impersonal poison pills go out into the motels of the country. I mean, even as Canada, we don't want it to happen. In Burijan's one other anecdotal piece, in Burijan's My Glorious Master, he describes his little personal biography of Srila Prabhupada, his exchanges with him. He recounts one incident where Burijan was in, I believe it was Hong Kong, and some arrangement was made for Prabhupada to be an invited guest speaker at a program. There was a group of people, and their Swamiji was an impersonalist, and Prabhupada was also invited as a co-speaker. Much to Burijan's surprise, he expected Prabhupada would reject it, and Prabhupada accepted the invitation. I'll just do it quickly. Burijan's a very good writer. But when Prabhupada came in, he came in on time because the fashionably late Swami was fashionably late. And there were two seats. One was really big and one that was really puny. And Prabhupada immediately went and sat on the really big seat. And they were trying to say, "Swamiji, can you sit over there?" And Prabhupada was pretending like he didn't hear. And then Swamiji came and saw that the big seat was already occupied. So he sat in the other seat. And, you know, the organizers were already, like, you know, uncomfortable. But they called upon Prabhupada to speak, and he spoke. And the other speaker spoke in Hindi. Burijan didn't understand. But, you know, he saw Prabhupada was, you know, some kind of hand gesture. And his body language was indicating the Prabhupada was not happy with what the man was saying. At a certain point in time, Prabhupada also had a microphone, and he just erupted and smashed the person right in this public assembly and got up and walked out. He didn't tolerate. And afterwards, Burijan asked what was he saying, and how, you know, he said he was speaking that Krishna is not a person, he has no face, he has no arms, he has no personality, I can't sit and hear that. So, reference is made in the purport. One moment. Well, maybe somebody knows. In Bhagavad Gita, when meditation is recommended, the word matpara, which means pertaining to me, is used. Where is that reference? Matpara. Madgata matpara prana orienta prasparam.
Machita.
Huh?
261.
Let's see. There it is. Very good. Tani sarvani samyamya yukta asita matpara vashe hi yasyendriyani tasya pragya pratishtita. Interesting conch shell. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of steady intelligence, stitta pragya. So, in the word for word, matpara is in relationship with me. So just as Prabhupada is saying, in Bhagavad Gita, when meditation is recommended, the word matpara, which means pertaining to me, is used. So, after so many nice instructions that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, in the 12th chapter, text number 1, Arjuna is asking Krishna, which do you consider to be more perfect, those who are always properly engaged in your devotional service, or those who worship the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested? And in that verse, the word avyakta, aksharam avyakta. Aksharam means beyond the senses, the unmanifested. So the avyakta, this word avyakta, can refer to the material creation. It also can refer to the Supreme Lord. The material world in its unmanifested state is dormant within the body of Mahavishnu. That's the avyakta. What's the verse? Avyakta vyaktim apanam manyate mam abhutaya. Whether the Krishna exists beyond the unmanifested state, he exists beyond the manifested state, he also exists beyond the unmanifested state. He's the source of both. He's the source of his own energy. He exists beyond his own energy. And one should meditate upon that, which is beyond the unmanifested and manifested states of the material energy. But in this chapter, chapter 12, avyakta is referring to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is has this unmanifested feature, or his impersonal feature, that which one cannot fix one's mind upon. It's not only difficult, one cannot, or say it in reverse, how can you fix your mind upon something that has no qualities? It has no form. There's nothing distinct about it. How do you fix your mind upon that? The answer is you can't. The best you can do is neti neti, not iti. Not this, not this, not this, not this, not this. What is Brahman? It's not this, it's not this, it's not this. Well, what is it? It's not this, it's not this. Okay, that's a half a definition. What is it? It's not this, it's not this. It's avyakta. It's unmanifested. It's aksharam, it's beyond the senses. Okay, so what is it? It's not this, it's not this. Therefore, meditation is meant always to be upon the personal feature. So, back to 4th canto, chapter 8, text 45. In this whole section, Narada is giving the process of meditation upon the personal feature. All of these preliminary things in the yoga process are to facilitate fixing the mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he has a very supremely attractive form. If there's something that one is attracted to in the vyakta state of the material creation, we'll compare that to the all-attractive feature of the all-attractive person, it dwarfs it. It becomes insignificant. If one can actually bring the mind to the point of focusing upon or perceiving that which is beyond the senses, it's possible by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can disclose his form as he did with Dhruva, and his yoga and meditation became perfect. Last thing, in the world today, in our modern times, as Prabhupada is stating in the purport, this notion of impersonalism is pervasive. Even in our Christian society, it's very clear that God is a person. It should be very clear. But when you connect God as a person with form and pastimes and very personal qualities and loving exchanges on a personal level, a common thing I've heard is, oh, God can't look like that. So nirvishesha shunyavadi pasyatyati satarini. In the Western world, which is filled with impersonalism and voidism, not that, you know, the Eastern world isn't. In India today, of course, people take to personalism when it's properly presented, very, very nicely, very easily, commonly. But impersonalism is very, very strong, very prevalent, very predominant. And it's not getting weaker. I've never had this experience, but there are those devotees that are very accomplished at making messages available on websites, and there's a huge misinformation program going on with propagating impersonalism on the internet. So, you know, that's where people get their information these days, is the internet. They're armchair savants because they go on the internet. They know whatever they want. Just, you know, click and they learn about impersonalism. It's abundant. So just hearing a lecture from Srila Prabhupada where he was describing something a little different, but it was about the misidentification of the self with the body, and as a result, the rampant idea of sensualism, because I want to be happy and I'm this body, and so enjoy. He gave the order or the responsibility: help your fellow countrymen understand this misdirected civilization. And similarly over here in the spiritual teaching department, who's going to do this work if it's not those that have received the mercy from and rescued us from that impersonalism? If one wants spirituality, where do you go in the spiritual marketplace to get it? There's lots of other stuff out there. So the devotees who have received this mercy have a responsibility to convince, to make it available at least. And one of the most compelling ways is through Srila Prabhupada's books. The wide distribution in various venues and ways, not only one way, it's not limited. as a antidote to this disease of impersonalism. Very strong. I'll share one other anecdotal thing. Many of you know Gauravani, Anutama and Rukmini's son, who's very involved. In fact, he gave up a very lucrative career, a six-figure income career, in because he's very talented in graphic design, to try to make it his income, support his family through kirtan. And he has a lot of appreciation for people who are what he calls on the path. Although, you know, speaking to him a little more confidentially, he's clear that, you know, they're quite impersonal. But there's something, it's something more than gross sensuality. They sense something, they're just not directed. So he's very careful to not, like, hammer them. But, late last summer or early fall, I was in New York and he came through on a weekend and he was really excited. He said, I met somebody who actually is chanting for Krishna. It's very popular. People pay for what we do, having kirtan. They, you know, regularly. There's a devotee that works for Kripalu Yoga, and it's, you know, it's a regular thing. You know, several times a week they have the big named people, and they sell tickets for people to come and hear this one, that one. Sometimes our devotees are also participants in all of that. But there isn't a trace of do it for Krishna. Huh? How is that possible? They feel something. Just like one of the persons that was attending the function yesterday at Vibhu Chaitanya's home. His co-workers, they're, you know, it was the first exposure they had to anything that's of Vedic culture. So I was asking some of them, you know, little separate conversations, what's your experience like? What did you think? And a couple of them independently said, I felt something. I felt my troubles just went away and I felt very calm and peaceful inside. They don't know what that is. So there are persons that also don't know what that is on the receiving end, but they also don't know what it is on the giving end. And Prabhupada was very concerned that if one hears that sound vibration from someone who's impersonal, it's taking poison through the ears, although it's chanting of the holy name, and it's very popular. Anyway, it's important for those that have the good fortune of receiving Krishna consciousness through Srila Prabhupada and his great mercy to make it available to others. The chanting of the holy name and the distribution of Srila Prabhupada's books are two very prominent ways. Conducting festivals, just like the upcoming Rath Yatra, giving people a chance to hear. And ideally it's not just a party for ourselves, it's to give others an opportunity. We're servants of the holy name and our disciplic succession. And give other people the opportunity to see Lord Jagannath and hear Krishna's holy name. In that, if that is the mood of giving, then it will be of great benefit. And on, doing such activity. We need to purify ourselves, we need to make our own sadhana, our own practices very strong and effective. We also need to give. The receiving and the giving both should be strengthened. Hare Krishna. Any discussion on this topic? I'm looking at Jitendra.
That word spiritual marketplace, do you remember those books? I think you gave them to me, and I thought you gave them to me, and I gave them to you. There's two books, spiritual marketplace, it talks about all the different groups out there.
Yeah.
How they're buying people's attention.
Correct. I would. The connection of I would is going back some number of years, Gopal Bhatta Prabhu volunteered to work with our North American leadership to see if we could work in North America on strategically planning our future so that we would be stronger. You know, the present generation of leaders leaving behind them a stronger ISKCON in North America. So one of the things that he did was when we were gathered in Los Angeles, he had a professor from University of California in somewhere in the Bay Area, maybe it was Berkeley, or Santa Cruz or something. He had him come. He was like given some compensation to come and address us on this topic, you know, so that we could not be in our own little ivory tower Hare Krishna world, but what's going on in the world, in the spiritual marketplace. And he was describing from his, he was a sociologist, from his studies why certain religious organizations are going down, down, and further down, and why some organizations were getting their message across to people more effectively in North America. And it was a very interesting presentation, an hour and a half presentation plus questions. And my little memory, fallible memory, says there are two points that he was primarily making. One of them was, in America, the monolith or the mother church idea is imploding. It was once upon a time, make a big church and get a lot of people to come to the big church. But the what people who are out in the spiritual marketplace are looking for is not just the big church. Those places are becoming empty. It's where their needs are met. And without changing one's message to meet people's needs, and then in the course of doing so, giving the message. And that doesn't deplete the mother church, it rather gives feeders into the mother church. And those that are doing that type of thing, they're sustaining, and those that aren't doing that type of thing, they're fading, struggling, and having to like close the shop. Another was, I don't know if he used this word, but social networking was the concept that he was presenting. And finding pockets of people that have some overlapping interest, like your particular religious teachings interests, and connecting with those people, and then gradually bringing spirituality into that. So like with the kirtan and the yoga circuit is an example of that type of thing. And prasadam distribution. And so we were doing that for a little while. Haridas was assisting. And it, you know, got a little traction, and it kind of faded over time. Locally here in Chicago area. But it's not one who is doing that particular thing is Suradas. He's come here, right, to Chicago in the course of his... Is Chicago part of Suradas' circuit? From what I have... I didn't hear this from him directly, but his experience is that these people are not likely to become devotees, like, you know, sadhakas, like, you know, practicing Hare Krishna devotees. Rather, it's a way of injecting some Krishna conscious message in a very carefully presented way to help elevate them in this lifetime towards something towards the future. That's an important preaching also. We're not only interested in, you know, full-time participants. We certainly want that also. But, you know, to give the message of Krishna consciousness, they're very receptive to hear it, and they smile, and they feel good, and they go on with their lifestyle, largely. It doesn't enter their heart, like Dhruva was saying to Narada, because they're holding on to something else. It's called sense gratification. Yes.
Did you ever hear Srila Prabhupada say, don't let this become another churchianity?
Churchianity. No, but not those particular words, but certainly there's concern along those lines that we not, like, you know, one can study the Christian religion in the West and see how it became watered down from what it was, and we should be very careful to not follow the same path. So that's the challenge, how to be relevant at the same time not abandon principle. It takes expertise, it takes Krishna consciousness to do that. Anything else? Yes? He's going to give you the microphone so that everybody can hear you, including me.
Is it okay to ask a question?
Sure.
So I was having a discussion with her on Monday.
Okay.
And she was exponentially, when she asked the answer that same question, about how you were talking about how Lakshmi would not allow to enter into the last dance because her austerities were more in the form of all weapons.
Yeah.
And so you were saying that a person who has austerities in the form of all weapons, they continue to add it.
Not just exactly austerity, but association with Brijvasis, association with lovers of Krishna in the mood of Vrindavan. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it specifically mentions, Lord Chaitanya says to Venkatabhata, that the Shrutis, the personified Vedas, unlike Goddess of Fortune, they associated with the gopis, and as a result, they entered into the rasa dance. So it doesn't specify austerities, it specifies association. But when part of the idea of austerity is to give up something that may seem uncomfortable for one to give up, so that's an austerity. But from another perspective, it's not an austerity, it's a relief of something unwanted. Prabhupada gives the example, if the physician says, my dear patient, smoking is causing a problem for your health, you should give up smoking. Oh, I can't give up smoking. It would be a great austerity. But from the healthy position, perspective, smoking is an austerity. It smells bad, tastes bad, it's bitter. So austerity may mean no longer participating in something that's detrimental and harmful. But to the one who has a material addiction to that something, looks like an austerity. So following the receiving the mercy of the residents of Vrindavan may look like an austerity to a materialist. But the operative principle is receiving their mercy. And by receiving their mercy, one can enter into Krishna's pastimes. And not otherwise, however elevated one may be. Okay? Maria, you okay? Okay. Anything else? Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Ki jai.